Hey there, I'm an animated Connor Walsh, which is kind of ironic because people say I'm pretty animated in real life. Anyway, welcome to Walsh Wednesday, my new slash old podcast. Let me explain. Back in high school in 2013, I was pressured by some friends to do an impromptu solo acoustic performance in my cafeteria. Believe it or not, people really took to it. And it turned into a monthly musical series I did through the rest of high school. Who said High School Musical wasn't realistic? By college, I turned Walsh Wednesday into a web series, focusing on interviews surrounding community events, charities, and local entertainment in the Hudson Valley and Capital Regions of New York. Walsh Wednesday spawned several spin-offs such as the Walsh Wednesday Concert Series, Walsh Wednesday Spotlights, and Walsh Wednesday The Reflective Series before its hiatus in 2021. After that, I spent the last 3 years working in radio, honing my craft, conducting unbelievable interviews, traveling to fascinating places, attending mind-blowing events, and meeting some of my personal heroes. Now, with the help of some awesome people I've met along the way, I'm bringing Walsh Wednesday back bigger and better than ever. Let's stay curious, keep an open mind, and as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Welcome to Walsh Wednesday. On this week's episode, we speak with CEO of Mental Health America of Dutchess County, Andrew O'Grady. Andrew and I discuss the role of MHA here in the Hudson Valley, how mental health is addressed in a post-COVID world, and also about Andrew's recent recovery from surgery on his throat. Not just that, but we both share incredible stories of when we saw a true difference being made in our community. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, and Walsh Valuation. Hey there, and welcome back to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and we have a great episode for you guys today. One of the things about Walsh Wednesday that is really near and dear to my heart, especially if you tuned into the Reflective series, is that besides music, we also love prioritizing mental health. So music and mindfulness, that was the slogan for the Reflective series. Now we're here doing the full-on revival of Walsh Wednesday, and with us is somebody who can give us a lot of great examples of taking care of your mental health. With us today, we have Andrew O'Grady, CEO of MHA of Dutchess County. Andrew, how are you, man?
Great. Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
We got in touch through our mutual friend CJ, of course. CJ, I've had him on representing CPCA. Well, actually, that was back at the radio station I had him on. I got to get him on for this too.
Yeah.
And then also, funny enough, our families are friends too.
Very nice.
My cousins, Nick and Megan, they know CJ. Mm-hmm. So thank you, CJ, for getting this all together.
Nice job, buddy.
Yes. So we're recording this in May. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Yeah. So, you know, very big month for taking care of everything. But one thing that's come up in a number of discussions that I've had with folks, whether talking about suicide awareness, mental health awareness, things along those lines, mental health awareness is more than just a month. It's more than just a day. It's a really 24/7, 365 approach. So first of all, obviously we can get into a lot of specifics later, but for anybody who's not familiar with MHA, could you tell us just a little overview?
Yeah, I was. We had talked about doing this a while back, but I've been hesitant. If you're watching this, you've never heard my voice before, you probably think, you know, it's fine, but people are like, oh, your voice sounds good. It doesn't sound good to me. I had, February, I had ACDF surgery, anterior cervical discectomy and fusion surgery on my C3 through C7 discs. And they go in through the front. So they cut you here and they go in and they move everything over and then they replace the discs in the neck. And the hardware is pretty cool. You see an x-ray someday, I'll show it to you. But that went fine and I'm doing pretty well. But they paralyzed my vocal cord nerve in the process. So my vocal cords are supposed to bang together. That gives us our voice. One of them is just sitting there, not doing anything, and the other one's moving. So that gravelly voice you hear, is that's where that's coming from. So I've been doing these kind of interviews and radio commercials for a long time, and I have to speak in front of a lot of people, and it's been a little difficult, but we're here, and hopefully people can hear me fine during this. May is Mental Health Month, and you know, we all vacillate from being mentally well to being really mentally unwell, and most of us never get to either one, really.
Yeah,
we're always somewhere in the middle, and we're moving on that scale based on what happens to us during the day or during the week, or do we have a death in a family? Do we have a relationship issue? Is finances a struggle? And we vacillate, and sometimes people get stuck on the mentally unwell area a little too long, and that becomes part of their routine. And that's tough for people. And but it's even more tough on family members. Family members have a hard time trying to know how to help. They want to be helpful. They want somebody to just cheer up and be better. It doesn't work that way. So it's a struggle on families. So it really impacts everybody. And, you know, we all know somebody in our lives, whether close family members or, you know, an extended family member that struggles. And you know that it impacts everybody and everything. So it's really important to shine a spotlight. But like you said, it's not just May. It's every day, every month, that we need to just stay vigilant, stay focused, understand, try to find outlets to understand better how to help somebody. And that's where MHA can come in to play. We do a lot of things at MHA. You can check our website, mhaduchess.org. We do a lot of community interventions and programs, but we also do teaching. We teach mental health first aid, which is a great class for anybody to take. It kind of teaches people how to feel confident and comfortable talking to somebody that's struggling. Which is a big thing. So think of it like, you know, you're taking first aid classes when you're a teenager to be a lifeguard or whatever. This is mental health first aid, same thing. But we do a lot of different things in the community, and one of the things is educate. Plus, we are aware of our other community partners that can do the same thing, like NAMI Mid-Hudson, and they have a family-to-family class where they teach people how to feel more confident and comfortable talking to your family member who struggles with a serious mental health issue. So anyway, I'm going to take a pause. One of the problems with this vocal cord thing is that I expend too much air going out because I can't regulate the air going in and out. So when I talk too much, which God knows I do, I can get a little winded. So
take a breath, grab a drink. I'll talk for a second. No worries. But I think that's great what you're saying about teaching other people around the one that's having the mental health issue to be able to talk about it. You know, I was a camp counselor for many years, I believe 12 or 13. And one of the things about it that I struggled with when I first started, now mind you, I was a teenager when I first started, was when you had somebody with either some kind of special needs or some kind of mental health issue, you know, we didn't have that training right away. It's like, we're just teenagers trying to do a camp. And it was kind of trial by fire. I also just want to say it was a phenomenal camp, and I loved every second of my time there, and our directors were amazing. But it was just one of those things, like, in growing up and learning on the job, really had to find the right language, the right body language, the right ways to handle it in a reasonable and respectful manner. Because I saw some people who would just get really aggravated. It's like, why is this kid just behaving like this? Why is this parent reacting like this? Why? And just like, they're being more judgmental than they were curious about the situation. And when you really try to get that curiosity and that empathy in there, that's when you can actually make the difference with things. I hope I gave you enough time to recharge your voice.
I hope so too.
It's all good. If we got to take pauses, no worries. But I think actually talking about your story, if you don't mind, could be a really good allegory for a lot of people. I've heard your commercials for many years now. You've been with MHA for about 2 decades now?
24 years and 24 the executive years. Director for about 11.
Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so you've been very vocal, but I'm changing, with this for a very long time. So now to, you know, lost part of your voice, is this a temporary thing or are they expecting this to go on?
Well, the nerve is paralyzed, so they say it could, within a year, it should come back on. It could come back on, 80% chance.
Okay.
But after a year, it's kind of like, you know, a missing person. And after a year, they might say that they're not around anymore. And that might be the end of the vocal cord. And then I'll have to figure out options after that. But
missing person, the way that you just stated that, I think is really perfect because a lot of people who are struggling with mental health do feel like a missing person in their own life.
Yeah.
So what has this journey been like for you? Losing your voice, having this surgery, what has this done for your mental health and how are you responding to it?
I've been very lucky. I'm not the kind of person that gets stressed too easily. Obviously everybody gets stressed at times, but I feel like I regulate that pretty well. And I've done that through this, but it is frustrating. It is different. You know, it's a massive change. You don't think about that. Like, I'm able to communicate with you right now because I had a procedure done after the surgery in which an ENT gave me an injection, a filler, they call it. I say Botox, but anybody that knows about Botox, like I told that to an esthetician and she laughed at me because Botox apparently shrinks things. This is a filler. This fills up my vocal cord. So by doing that, it brought it a little closer to the other one, and I have some gravel. But before that, I had nothing. It was just air. There was no reverberation at all. And that was pretty frustrating because really I couldn't regulate my air, so I got dizzy often.
Oh, wow.
Swallowing is not easy. I have to be careful how I swallow because all of that has to do with that too. So it's a difference and it's a change. Now, you know, I'm getting older. I'm 58 now. Things are going to change in our lives. We're going to have to make adjustments. People get in accidents all the time. Things happen. So, you know, it's not a woe's me thing. Everybody has their own struggles and everybody has their own path. But it was a change. I was down in New York City going to a play with my family and we were trying to figure out where the theater was. And I knew we were at the wrong theater because the sign wasn't there. But it was one of the, they have different theaters. So I knew this company, I knew we were at the wrong one. So the guy's like, just come in and go this way. And my family's ready to go, like a herd of animals. And I'm like, wait a minute. And I said, is this the theater for the play we're seeing? And the guy, the young security guard, looks at me, he goes, I can't hear you. And he turned away and walked away.
Oh my God.
And I was like, wow, like that I've never been treated like that, but people with disabilities are always treated like that. There are people that are extremely insensitive, to your point, camp counselors that just, you know, they think it's a behavioral thing that people have that they're doing on purpose, and they just dismiss them. So my daughter was ready to punch the guy. So that's pretty good. But
if that's not a New York City story for you, I don't know what is.
But it has been different. I can't really project my voice, so talking into a microphone is fine. Having a meeting with one-on-one in a room seems fine.
Yeah.
But if I had a meeting with 7 or 8 people and I had to project my voice, which is my job, really, it's not easy. So there has to be changes I had to make, adjust my sales, you know, having to explain to everybody. And I feel like I have to do that. But at the same time, you know, ever since COVID, people are like, oh, what, is he sick? And I don't want to be near him.
Yeah.
Does it hurt? Because they get the empathic people wonder, are you okay? Does it, because it sounds like it's very hoarse and raspy and painful, but it's not.
Well, that's good.
So I have to explain all that to people. Anyway, part of it's me wanting to explain it because I guess I'm self-conscious about it myself. But
it's a big change.
Yeah, but we all have changes in our lives. We all go through things. People that develop serious mental health issues, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, those type of disorders kick in somewhere in a range of 18 to 20 years old. So, you know, a kid could be going through life and everything's good. And then all of a sudden, and their family, they go to college, they get admitted to college, whatever their path is. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're acting in a way, and they end up dropping out of college because they can't keep it together. And now the family doesn't know what to do. And, you know, all the dynamics of sharing with, how's your kid doing? How's the college? Well, it's a big difference now. It's not the case. And he's struggling or she's struggling. And so we all go through things, and, you know, we have to figure out how to do it. Now, people with mental health issues don't always get treatment because they want to, you know, they think it's a weakness on their part. They're embarrassed. The stigma that's attached to mental health issues keeps people from wanting to, number one, admit that they have an issue.
Yeah.
And the reason I do these commercials and the reason I've been a voice for mental health for 10 years is because people, I would love in my lifetime to see it get to a point where if I have a gallbladder issue or a blood pressure issue, I'm going to get it treated. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to have a problem telling you, oh, I had to take blood pressure medication now, and I do, and it's fine. But admitting you're taking a mental health medication is not the easiest thing to do. It's almost mm-hmm. like you're admitting there's something wrong with you. There's something wrong with you if you have high blood pressure, I guess, right?
Yeah.
But you do that and you get treated. So there's help, and people don't have to suffer unnecessarily with mental health issues, but they do because of the stigma. Also because the medication is not exactly perfect yet. There's side effects to it. It doesn't make you feel like you. So, you know, people with bipolar disorder start taking medication. It takes about a month or so. The medication starts making them more regulated. So a loved one might think, this is great. You know, Connor's not going off the wall here, and he's not going to crash the car, and he's not going to do this, and he's not going to do that. He's not going to end up in a hospital. So that's great. Except that Connor feels like, you know, that's a scale of 1 to 10 I talked about. You're not at a 5. For you, you're at like a 2 or 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So you feel like there's a blanket over top of you, and it doesn't feel like it's you, and it doesn't feel like you're being the Connor you want to be.
Yeah.
So you start to stop the medication because you don't like it.
Yeah.
And then you inch up. If a bipolar disorder example, you're inching up to a 4 or 5. Now you're feeling okay. 6, you're feeling great. That's like a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
7, you're feeling like super Connor. And so you're like, this is great. I don't need this. Family's getting concerned because you're ramping up and you're different. And then you get to an 8. And you're speeding, going 1,000 miles an hour and staying up all night, and get to a 9. And with a bipolar disorder, you start hallucinating and getting paranoid. And before you know it, you're in the hospital.
Yeah.
So it's a really difficult disorder to manage, both for the individual and for the family. I mean, I'm focusing on one disorder, but there's a whole wide range of mental health issues that people struggle with.
Absolutely. It's interesting that you did bring up, first of all, you said the schizophrenia. I do have a family member who, you know, struggles with that. They live with that, and to see the impact that it has had on their life, and they are an older family member too. Just imagine if when they had that moment, as you said, it was early 20s, where it was just kind of flip a switch and it happened. Imagine if that was today or closer to today, how different or possibly easier their journey could have been.
Oh, yeah.
So that's something that really resonates with me. And then talking about medication, I'm very candid about my journey. I really pushed away mental health for a long time. I don't know why exactly. It's not like it was something that was very like demonized to me, but I might just put it in the category of Catholic guilt. That alone could do it. But when I finally started going to therapy after the death of one of my best friends, I was in a really, really low place. And I was already struggling with issues of depression and anxiety before that anyway, but I would like really hit a low. What you were saying about the medication is like how things will change somebody. It took a long time before I finally was like, you know, maybe I can try medication. And I will say this, and I will say this as my story alone, because not everybody's going to have this same experience. Right. The first day that I took the medication, that night, I was just laughing. I was just laughing, like,
really?
The most authentic laugh that I had in a long time.
Wow.
And I kind of stopped myself, especially because my therapist and my doctor is saying like, oh, it might like take like 2 weeks or something to really kick in. call it a placebo, call it actually working, but whatever happened is like it really changed things. And then also for me too, I was afraid I'm a very creative person.
Yeah.
Am I going to lose my creative edge? Fortunately, in my case, again, individual my case, I was able to really kind of rein in all the millions of thoughts in my head and instead of being paralyzed with thought, actually move forward. So I'm very grateful for that, but I know that's not everybody's journey.
But that's a journey that's well worth sharing, and I'm glad you do share that because other people might hear it and take the chance. I think in your case, you know, you had such a long period of time of contemplating medication.
Yes.
And you always felt like crap while you were doing that.
Yes.
You weren't yourself. And then, you know, the idea, so the placebo effect, because these medications are not like pop a pill and it's a happy pill.
Yeah.
I mean, they do take time to start changing the chemistry of the brain. But in your case, just the idea of you finally agreed to, you got the prescription filled, you took it, that release right there at that moment, realizing that you finally did it and it's potentially going to be a very positive thing. And you convinced yourself that it was, because that's part of it too.
Yeah.
You have to believe it.
Yeah.
If you go into it saying this is all crap and it's not going to work, you know, it may still work, but, you know, it may also not. So,
yeah.
So you were in a good place and you took a while for you to get there, but because it took so long, I think that's a dynamic that happened that day. And it's just a cathartic release and a happiness that you took that chance and you're might be on a pathway to better.
Yeah. So, that was a year and a half ago.
Wow.
And I can say that I would say that my mental clarity is a lot better than it was definitely back then after my friend Jacob had passed. But then even before that too, you know, just a lot of things that were unresolved and I didn't have the right vocabulary to explain everything. I didn't have a voice.
Yeah.
So I think this is very interesting that here you are, you know, having these voice issues.
Yeah.
But to many people who are struggling with mental health, they do feel voiceless.
Yeah.
And whether it's they don't know what to say, they don't know how to say, or they feel like they've been muted somehow, some way. So to anybody who's listening and they do feel voiceless, what would you say to them right now?
I would say that, listen to Connor's story and things can change. People suffer unnecessarily without getting the help and the treatment they need. So I would say a good place to start is your primary care physician. You know, doctors now are kind of told or forced to ask questions around mental health. You might hear that when you go for your physical, and you should always have an annual physical, by the way. And they're going to ask you things about depression or anxiety. They're going to ask you those questions. And many of us immediately say, I'm fine, or I'm good. And they don't answer honestly. Be honest with that primary care doctor. That person is your person. You should be able to tell them anything. And it goes to the stigma and it goes to feeling ashamed about things or nervous that somebody's going to judge you or think differently of you. But your doctor will not do that. Trust me, your doctor has heard everything and anything. Everything. So you can't shock them. And be honest. Tell them the truth. And, you know, usually that type of depression that you're referring to is treatable by your primary care physician. You don't need to have a psychiatrist. When you get into the more serious mental health issues, I think a psychiatrist is the best person to talk to. But a primary care physician can prescribe ADHD medication, antidepressants, anti-anxiety medication. And so start there and do that. It is hard to find a therapist nowadays. Mm-hmm. It is hard to find a psychiatrist. We have a perfect storm of more awareness, talking about your family member that's older now, more awareness, people wanting to get help now when they didn't back then, and then less people in the field doing the work. So it's a perfect storm of crap because it's hard to find somebody.
Yeah, especially in a post-COVID world.
Yes.
Post-COVID world, it's been even worse.
COVID really got people to, you know, either people who were on that borderline of feeling anxiety and depression, and they managed it well, being isolated in your house, away from other people, that really took people over the top. And
there
was a wave of people looking for help, which was great because and a wave of people talking openly on podcasts and other things about mental health awareness. And I'm really happy to see that shift. But at the same time, are there enough helping professionals out there to answer the call, and I don't think there is right now.
And I think the other side of COVID too, not as many people are going into the medical field, whatever side that is, mental health, physical health, whatever that is. You know, there is a shortage. Mm-hmm. That's something I've talked to a number of people about, whether that was back on the radio station, whether it's been here, we do have that issue. I got very lucky. My very first try, I got a really great therapist.
That's great.
And I know that's very strange.
It doesn't always happen.
I will say this. So my grandparents, they were in hospice before they passed. And I got the grief counselor immediately afterwards. And the grief counselor was what led me into therapy. But I will say this. This is kind of hilarious. I had three different grief counselors in the span of like the 18 months that I was allowed. And it wasn't because I had an issue, but something came up with each, supposedly. We had one that moved out of the area. So I get that. Mm-hmm. Second one, I don't know what happened actually, because I get a text one day saying all hospice, what was it? All hospice meetings are canceled for today. Emergency situation, we'll get back to you. It was like, okay. And then I never heard from her, that grief counselor again. So I'm like, is she okay?
Yeah, maybe that was the emergency.
Exactly. Man. That's what I was afraid of. Jeez. And then the third one got a new job. So it's like, is it me?
Nah,
is it me?
But that's a common story, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, people in the mental health field, I don't think they're compensated well enough. With COVID and with, you know, the inflation and people getting agencies like mine, I run an organization that's 280 employees. We had to increase salaries pretty drastically just to retain staff and to recruit staff. But that little fight is going on amongst many employers. And there are many people, I think it might be generational, that are hopping from job to job, finding better paying jobs. And that unfortunately leaves all their clients or patients or whoever, whatever terminology you use, you know, losing somebody. And so it does happen. So, you know, I encourage you to stay true to just getting help. And and that does stink. You open up and you tell somebody your whole story and you have to start over again.
I really did feel like I was like, how many notes do you have here? How much do I have to repeat? But
that is a dynamic that unfortunately plays out with many people. That's too bad. But they got you to a therapist.
Yeah.
That focused on, you know, the bigger picture, not just the grief.
Fortunately, actually, it really wasn't. It was them inadvertently.
Mm-hmm.
They never were like, hey, you should go to a therapist after this. I think maybe once or twice it was brought up. Mm-hmm. Once the grief counseling was over, I think it was about 5 months between the last session and when I finally went to therapy. And I attribute it to two local organizations around here. When I was hosting In Touch at Town Square, we had James's Warriors on, and then we had the Be a Friend Project on. Back to back, literally one day and then the next day. Yeah. And like, I nearly cried in both of those interviews. And I looked up to the sky and was like, God, I get it. I'll go to therapy. I get it. So that's how that ended up working out. Something that you brought up, you raised salaries for your employees. You don't hear that very much in 2025. You're talking about retention. You're talking about actually caring for your employees and how that generational divide is of people a lot more on the younger end, the millennials, the Gen Zs like myself, how bouncing around from job to job to find higher pay, because unfortunately the companies that they're at aren't paying. I was unfortunately in one of those situations where I was specifically told in a recent job, there is no room for you to advance within this building. Mm. You are getting no more than what you're getting right now. And that's a very tough thing to hear.
Yeah.
So tell me where you're coming from with this, where it's like, holy cow, a company actually raising salaries and caring about their employees? Please tell us more.
I wish I could pay them more. I mean, we can only pay them what we can afford to pay them based on funding streams. But I wish I could pay them more. I don't want my employees working two or three jobs, which they do.
Yeah.
Many of them do. You know, it's First of all, staff morale is really important to me. Staff morale means that coworkers are getting along better. People are looking forward to coming to work, not dreading it. So how do you do that? You don't just do it with money. I mean, we do a lot of other things to improve staff morale. And I make that a priority for us. We have a, you talked about Mindfulness Wednesdays, right? Is that what you said?
Walsh Wednesday, the reflective series, yeah. Mindfulness and music. That so was the theme.
Mindfulness is really important. We contracted with a company called Mindful Text. So every day our employees on their company cell phone receive a text at 3 o'clock, and it's just a brief little snippet about, you know, staying grounded and being mindful. And then they can click and go further and deeper if they want that day.
Yeah.
But that's one thing. We work with the Interlight Spa in Rhinebeck, and we have a contract with them. So any one of our employees can go there for free anytime.
Wow.
We used to do that with a Salt Cave in Poughkeepsie, Hudson Valley Healing Center.
Oh, okay.
But they closed down, so we went to a different place. These are just little things that we can do for our staff to make them feel, you know, like today's Friday. Well, today's Wednesday, right?
This is live. It's not live. People know that this is pre-recorded. If you don't know this is pre-recorded by now, we need to talk.
Well, but this is Friday before Memorial Day weekend, and I'm gonna tell everybody if they're in a program that can close that they can leave at 2 o'clock today. So these are just little things we'd like to do. Salary isn't necessarily, you know, bumping somebody up, you know, a decent amount. It's still not. How much is it per paycheck? I mean, it's not going to change their world drastically, but we want them to have a salary that allows them to want to stay at MHA and not look for other places.
Yeah.
So we did that. We lobby and we advocate in Albany for the county, the state government to include a COLA, cost of living adjustment for not-for-profits. For many, many years, 10 years, they didn't give, you know, people in unions and school districts and MTAs and police departments and county offices, they have built-in raises every single year. We get a lot of our funding from the county and the state who have built-in raises every single year in their contracts, and they don't include an increase for our staff. So, you know, sometimes we have to bite the bullet when we do the increase, and we hope that next time we negotiate a contract annually, we can include that increase. And so, but it hurts a not-for-profit in the beginning because it's money that's not necessarily there.
Yeah.
You just take a chance. And I've been lucky. It's worked because retaining staff then improves morale. It improves everything I talked about internally, but it also assures a better outcome for the clients we serve. And we have less clients who lose staff after staff after staff. Or, you know, if a staff member leaves, somebody else has to pick up the caseload or part of that caseload. So now, you know, it can be a spiral where, you know, you leave, I'm stuck with your caseload on top of the caseload I already had, which is too high.
Yeah.
I'm underpaid as it is. And now am I going to be the next one to jump because I can't handle this? So increasing salaries, increasing benefits, that led to, you know, we got rid of that for a while. Hopefully that stays like that for a while. I wish I could pay my staff hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Really, the work they do is life-saving, and it's really difficult work. But we can only pay them what we can pay them. They are still underpaid, even though we increase their salaries. But, you know, it is what we're stuck with what we have, you know.
I'm the ad ref, calling a timeout on this week's episode to tell you about our sponsors.
Baseball has umps, you idiot.
I don't have an umpire outfit, okay? Sue me. Hey there, I'm the ad ref, calling a timeout on this week's episode to tell you about our sponsors. Next up to the plate, we have our friend Philomena Finelli from Impact PR and Communications. Philomena?
Thanks, Connor. I'm Philomena Finelli, CEO of Impact PR and Communications and a media maven, which is a fancy way of saying that my team and I help companies get in the news, transform leaders into thought leaders, and cut through the clutter with messaging that matters. And we do it all with a smile. Our agency was named the Woman-Owned Small Business of the Year for 2024 by the Metro New York District Office of the U.S. Small Business Administration, and we received the Gold Stevie Award for Women-Run Workplace of the Year, which is an international recognition. But it's not about the awards, it's about the personal interactions. We at Impact PR and Communications pride ourselves on crafting meaningful, results-driven public relations campaigns that are tailored to meet and exceed our clients' goals. If you want to learn more and talk to my team and I, Visit PRwithimpact.com and let us know that you found out about us from Walsh Wednesday.
Thanks, Philomena. Before I hand it back over to the ad ref, I want to let you know about a special performance I have coming up. On Father's Day, Sunday, June 15th, I'll be doing a special solo acoustic Father's Day performance at Heritage Financial Park, home of the Hudson Valley Renegades. I'll be performing from 12:30 to 2 o'clock ahead of the game, Hudson Valley Renegades versus Greenville Drive. You can find information in the description of this episode. That's enough out of me. Play ball! This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Dayrock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, and Walsh Valuation.
The work they do is life-saving, and it's really difficult work. But we can only pay them what we can pay them. They are still underpaid, even though we increase their salaries. But,
yeah,
you know, it is what we're stuck with what we have, you know.
No, understandable. But the fact that you're even trying, know, that's, I will say that about the best jobs that have ever worked. Are they the most glamorous jobs? No, right. But my favorite jobs that I ever worked were the places where I felt seen and respected mm-hmm. by the people I'm working with, the people I'm working for, yeah. and the company overall. Those were the best times. I talk about that summer camp. Mm-hmm. That summer camp was probably one of the best jobs that mm-hmm. I ever had.
Yeah.
I loved working there because, first of all, our camp director, Rob Misch, he just was incredible. And like, if you had an idea for a camp, you had an idea for a program, you were like, okay, let's go with it. Let's run with it. Like he uh-huh. enabled a lot of creativity yeah. and he allowed people to play for their strengths. Mm. I thought that was huge.
Yeah.
I also worked-
Smart leader.
Yeah. I worked for PBS for a time. The very first day that I worked there, we were recording a live session for a radio program and the band was playing live. And my boss said, first day, Connor, do you want to mix this? I've had first day jobs mm-hmm. where they don't like let yeah, you touch yeah. anything, but he trusted me.
Yeah.
And that day one trust led to a really good time with PBS.
Right.
And another job that I had working for, it was the Masry Center and Troy Savings Bank Music Hall in Albany. It was a combined thing. And the boss that I had on the audio crew, you know, he gave us a lot of hands-on experience and allowed us to mm-hmm. be ourselves and do all that. And yeah. I look at those three jobs in particular, and I look at the leadership, I look at the camaraderie, and I look at the respect. And I'm like, those are why they will yeah. always be like my three favorite yeah. jobs.
Well, that's how you retain staff. And that's, you know, everybody has their superpower. Everybody has their strength, the people we hire. Every once in a while, I'll put out something and ask people to tell me what their superpower is. It might have not have anything to do with the job, mm-hmm. but I want to know like who they are, what their strengths are, what they enjoy, because there might be a moment within the organization that we're going to try something new and I want to know what talent I have within there. Yeah. And if we can use it, great, because they're going to appreciate that as well.
Yeah.
And to get to know what their talents are and give them the autonomy to do things the way they want, ask for their feedback on how the place could be better, what can we do different? These are all things that I thought was common sense, but I do hear from a lot of people that it's not. They're shocked. Yeah. They're shocked that our leadership, and I'm not talking about me. I mean, I'm in the high position, but there are many high level leaders within our organization that have embraced my philosophy as well. In fact, they probably had the same philosophy. I brought them in because of that, and they got yeah. elevated because of that. And because it's pervasive throughout the agency, you know, we don't have bullying. I don't want to have bullying. We don't have that. We don't have that type of leadership. We have leadership that's going to be supportive. And, you know, if we ever have to let anybody go because they're not doing their job right, usually they thank us because they know that we gave them 50 opportunities before we just jumped to the conclusion and said, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
And we do it in a way that hopefully is not just, you know, your canned goodbye. You know, I like to give people feedback. While they might not be a fit for our organization at that moment, and this is not a big thing that happens, but when it happens, I like to give people feedback because I want them to be successful at the next job they have. I really do care, and my staff really do care about people.
Yeah.
It's not just, we don't just do this as a living with clients. We have to take care of ourselves. We should take care of our families. We should take care of our friends. We should just be a better society, you know? There would be less need for therapists if everybody had the ability to have a conversation and just listen.
Oh my God. Absolutely. To be that emotionally and mentally resilient, strong, and educated, that would be an incredible future.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We don't prioritize that though. See, these are things that could be prevention in this world. That's a whole other podcast. You know, what doesn't work in our mental health system and how can we make it better is a good one. I can point out a million things that don't work.
We ought to have you back on to talk about prevention too. That sounds great. Yeah. But actually there's something that you said that a couple things that you said, I definitely want to continue on with how you're saying of like going through and having these evaluations, giving the strong feedback. I don't know why I keep going back to this camp today. Like, I really don't talk about it this often, but
fond memories.
It is fond memories. I was a counselor in training. When I was a counselor in training, they had the CIT reviews, and at the end of the week, they would tell us what our review was so we can build for the next week. Mm-hmm. And then when we onward, some counselors were really great at it. Some of them weren't.
All right.
By the time I finally became a counselor, since I was one of the counselors who went through the training program, I knew how important it was to me. So I made sure that I was very thorough in doing it. And I hope that, you know, I was helpful to some. I know a few of them told me. And, you know, it's nice to hear that. And then the other thing that I want to bring up, you said about asking people their superpower. I think that's great. And I have a very similar question that I like to ask people that I first meet. What is it that you're passionate about? And it doesn't have to do with a company, the job, or whatever, or it could just be whatever you're passionate about. So, Andrew, while I have you here, what are you passionate about?
I golf. I like that. I like to be around people. Mm-hmm. I also like to be by myself. It's weird. It's a dynamic that, I don't know what I'm paid. You know, to be honest with you, I like to work. I'm passionate about the agency I work for, which is really great. I mean, you want somebody like that, I think, in leadership. You want somebody that embraces and takes ownership. This is not for profit. I don't own it. Yeah. I have a board of directors, but I run it like it's my own business. And that's my sole passion. And I think that's why MHA is successful. We grew from 100 staff members when I took over 12 years ago to 280 now. We've added many programs. We've gone from a budget of $6 million to $22 million a year annually. We've spent a lot of money that we didn't have to spend on radio. You worked in radio. You know how expensive commercials are. And we're all over the airways. But what that did for us is now people know what MHA is. They know what Mental Health America of Dutchess County is. They didn't before. We were like every other not-for-profit who complains about nobody. We're the best known secret around. You know, we're still a secret because people don't always understand what we do. But the commercials truly helped. And what the commercials did was it brought credibility to our agency. And it allowed us to... We've gotten two donations of buildings. Our Veterans Center in Pleasant Valley is a donated building because of our commercials. Somebody said, who can I donate? I want to donate this building to a not-for-profit that works with veterans. Oh, Andrew O'Grady in MHA works with veterans. Oh, I've heard his commercials. That's true.
There you go.
So all of a sudden, we could be lame. But because we have commercials, we're credible.
Yep.
We're not lame, by the way. But we're credible. So because of those commercials, he said, oh, I know of that organization. And he donated a $1.5 million building. And we turned it into the first veterans one-stop in the country. So when you ask what I'm passionate about, I think it's improving mental health care in our community, in the state, in the nation. I'm on a couple of boards of one is a national, an international PACIFYR. It's called PACIFYR. You can Google it. It's an app, kind of like Better Health, that does the therapy and the psychiatry online. But they're not just doing that. They're doing all the ancillary stuff, the care management, the health coaches, the life coaches, the nutritionists, all of that's on those apps. And I think that's so important.
That is huge.
For the whole person. So I'm doing that. We get these mindful texts, which I told you about. I'm a consultant with them. And you mentioned your CIT reviews.
Yeah.
So I just had a meeting with them the other day, and I said, let's take this to another level. Can you If I send you our evaluations, our CIT reviews for all our staff, and there's 12 different areas, and if somebody scores, you know, not great in an area, can our HR people let you know? And then you gear their specific text that they get every day from you. Could you add in something in that general area of wellness? So of that one of those 12 areas, are you, do you work well with your staff members? Do you answer phones quickly? Whatever it might be, if they scored poorly in that area, they're now going to get a text that's going to pump them up and give them ideas and things to think about for the next month about that area that they're struggling.
Wow.
It's, that's, you know, it's innovative. It's, yeah, it's an innovative idea. And these are the things that I'm passionate about, making things better, not just for my agency, but just improving things in general, especially when I work in this field of mental health. And anybody that's listening, if they've tried to access mental health care, it's not the easiest thing to do. So our, we changed our mission statement to being able to provide care in Hudson Valley without jumping through unnecessary hoops. There are a lot of unnecessary hoops that people have to jump through in order to get care. It's unfortunate. It shouldn't be that way. You know, you make a bunch of phone calls and you find out that your therapist you're calling doesn't have, doesn't accept your insurance, or, you know, so trying to improve on that system. You should be able to access mental health care as easily as you can call your primary care physician and get in because you have a sore throat. You shouldn't have your case closed and having to start over again because you've been, your case is closed. My case doesn't get closed at my primary care physician's office.
No.
I call up, oh, you haven't been here in 2 years. You should have got a physical, but come on in.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the way mental health care should be. But that's, again, you know, looking at the system and having another show about that.
Yeah.
But that's, I think that's what I'm passionate about. I think I'm passionate about making things, trying to make things better.
That's something really powerful to be passionate about. And I agree with you. I'm not the head of a company like yours, but one thing that I'm passionate about here on Walsh Wednesday is to have these authentic conversations like we're having this morning. And maybe, just maybe, somebody's hearing something and it could change their life. I'm a musician as well. And I always say, I want to be the soundtrack to your life, like the way that my favorite artists were for me. And I have that same mentality with any show that I'm hosting because I hope, obviously this isn't music, it's not a soundtrack, but I hope this is something to help guide you in your life. And it, you know, sometimes I've heard incredible things, you know, where I've heard, Connor, we got X amount of donations out of this. Connor, we got X amount of volunteers after this. There was one company that got a huge donation out of nowhere. And they thanked the person and was like, oh my God, like, how did you find us? Like, we don't know you. You don't know us. Like,
they mentioned your show.
Where did they do this? It's like, oh yeah, no, I heard Connor's show on the radio.
Wow.
And it's like, it's moments like that. And like, I really, I remember I did cry in the moment when I heard that, because working in something like this and also in your industry, it can be a very helpless industry.
Of course.
It can be a very, well, again, as we were talking about, like sore throat or something physical, you can see that. Mental health, you can't necessarily see that right away. It's also tough to see the results right away. And I'm sure you have moments in your industry where it's like those moments of you're similar on the same level of, oh, I heard through Connor's show. Emotional moments. So I guess as we're wrapping up this episode, let's try to end with that. Is there a certain moment or certain moments where you have felt, wow, we're really doing the right thing here?
One thing that stands out, and I should probably tell you moments that have to do with my staff and what they've done, but this is something that I think about. I get a text through Facebook every year on a certain date for the last 4 years. 25 years ago, when I was a new therapist, I don't even have a great recollection of this, but I impacted somebody so much that they really did it for themselves. But a woman came in and she was very depressed and she was pregnant and she was thinking about ending her life, which would have ended the life of the baby. I worked with her. I wasn't some savior, but I did what I do, and we chatted, and somehow for her it got better, and so you know, many years went by. Social media wasn't even around back then.
Yeah.
Many years went by. She found me on social media and she texted me through Facebook and said, this is a picture of my daughter. She's 18. And if it wasn't because of you, she and I would not be here today. That's incredible, right? I mean, that's, she remembered that many years later. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah.
It, the work that you do here, no, it's not working one-on-one, but you can make a difference, and you do make a difference. And the fact that you have these conversations is huge. You're right. There's going to be somebody that hears this that it resonates with, and they're going to get it. They're going to, you might never even know about it. They're going to talk to their primary care doctor. They're going to take that step. They're going to have that euphoric moment like you had when they take their first pill.
Yeah.
Life is going to be different. I hope somebody makes a donation to MHA of Dutchess County. We're always looking for donations. So if you're out there hearing this and you like our passion, we could always use your support. And we will do great things with whatever's donated to us. We don't just put it in our pockets. It doesn't happen that way. Mm. But there are so many stories like that. I'm going to share one more.
Absolutely. Go for it.
I was working at Vassar Hospital. This has nothing to do with MHA. When my kids were in college, I worked weekends at Vassar, our local hospital. And it's a sad story, but I was working in the ER, and my job as a social worker is to support people at their worst moments. So this baby passed away. It was terrible. Family came in, and the doctor tells the family, I'm sorry, it didn't work out. And then I'm there with the doctor, and then the doctor leaves because everybody starts crying, and doctors don't want to deal with that. So, but here, I have to deal with it. So it was an African-American family. So here I am, this big, giant, bald. I'm a big guy, 6'2", bald white guy with a white coat. And I'm like standing out in this family. And family came in, and more family came in, and more family came in. And it was terribly emotional. Without getting too graphic, the baby's there, and they don't just take the baby away, and people are holding the baby. It's a really hard thing to deal with. I was not sitting there holding court and talking like I am on this talk. I'm just there, just telling them that if they ever have a question, or if I'm here, if they want to talk about it, whatever. Nobody really took me up on it, but I was there. About a year later, the matriarch of the family, the grandmother that was there that day, she calls me out of the blue at MHA. She researched me. She found out I run Mental Health America of Dutchess County, and she called me. My phone rang. I picked it up, and she goes, you don't remember me, but I'm so-and-so, and she recounted the situation. I said, oh, I remember that. That was true. She goes, I just want you to know that you being there was life-changing, and it helped every one of us so much. That came out of the blue a year later. I mean, that's amazing.
Wow.
So the impact we all have on people, we don't have an idea of how big of an impact it is. And no matter what your job is, just be kind to other people. No matter, I don't care if you work at Home Depot or Stop and Shop or whatever your job is, just be kind. Throw a smile out there. It makes a huge difference. And you will impact people in a positive way.
Mm. God,
I think this is probably one of the more important episodes that we've had in a while. And
I'm glad you had me on.
I'm so glad that I've had you on. I would love to have you on again, talk about other things.
It.
Absolutely. As we wrap things up, where can people find more information on MHA?
MHADuchess.org, Mental Health America. So MHADuchess, DUTCHESS.org. You can find me on Facebook, on LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever. You can reach out to me directly if you want to. You can call 845-473-2500. That's 845-473-2500. If you're in this area, Dutchess County, and you want some assistance on trying to access care or some guidance, check us out. On our website, there's Ask an Expert. You can always type a question in there and we'll get back to you.
Yeah.
So those are the ways.
That's
a call.
That's great. And of course, we'll have all the links and information in the description of this episode, so you won't have to go too far. And if you feel voiceless, you will be heard. This is incredible. Andrew, again, thank you so much for being on.
Great having me. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm Connor.
I'm Andrew.
And as always, we're glad we get to
spend some time.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week, Impact PR and Communications, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County, Locks That Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Walsh Valuation, and Day Rock. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. You can support this channel by becoming a Patreon member with memberships as low as $5 a month. With that, you can get behind-the-scenes content, your name featured in the credits of each episode, and access to the Spend Some Time chat. You can find that and more by scanning the QR code on your screen or by going to the links in the description. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and I'm glad we get to spend some time.